Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joined by Warren Sharp at Sharp Football on Twitter. Check out his website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. Sharp Football Stats right now. And in my hand right now, I'm holding Warren's 2019 football preview, the paperback version. You can also get it in PDF off his websites or Amazon. Warren, I appreciate you taking time out for me this morning.
Yeah, definitely. Love talking about the Bears. Such an interesting team. Try to project, and happy to talk with you this morning.
Well, and we'll start right there with the Bears. And just from reading through the Bears section, once again, for everybody that hasn't checked out the preview before, seven full pages, chock full of analysis on every single team in the NFL. So if you're even listening to this and you're not necessarily a Bears fan, but you have your NFL team, it's all right here for you. So make sure that you pick that up. With the Bears and just kind of looking a little back to, I guess you have to look back towards 18 to project towards 19. I guess off the top, what did you think of what Matt Nagy was able to do, especially from a play calling and offensive perspective in year one?
Well, I love Matt Nagy, what he contributed to the team, the approach, the style of offense. You know, obviously, I'm a huge Andy Reid fan just because I love efficient football coaches. And so Matt Nagy was able to study under one of the best in the league, in my opinion. And you know, look, they I don't want to say they took advantage of the circumstances they were presented with, but they had a lot of things in their favor that comprised that 2018 season. First and foremost, you look at the jump. I mean, everything's decided by the quarterback ultimately, and the jump in productivity from a rookie to a sophomore is measurable and massive for really good quarterbacks around the league, guys that have been drafted in the top 15 picks or so. So I talk about that in the chapter, and of course that fit Mitchell Trubisky. His performance obviously improved under better coaching, as well as just being more comfortable with teammates and being more familiar with how the NFL operates. And then the second biggest factor, I think, was just the strength of schedule. If you look at the difference between what the Bears faced in 2017, which was Trubisky's rookie year, they played the NFL's most difficult schedule. And last year, they got to play the second easiest schedule. They went from facing like the seventh toughest defenses in 2017 to the easiest schedule of defenses in last year's schedule. So when you combine, you know, Nagy's approach, his tactics, his coaching with an influx of talent, Mitchell Trubisky's second year, and a much easier schedule, that kind of cluster of the perfect storm is one of the biggest things that propelled this team to go 12-4 last year.
When you think of efficiency in terms of Matt Nagy's offense, as you mentioned, what do you look for when you're going for efficiency, and what did the Bears do specifically to make themselves more of an efficient offense?
Great question. So they ended up using a lot more 11 personnel. Now, one of the things that Andy Reid does a lot of is he uses a lot more 12 personnel than the league average, but Nagy took advantage of the roster that he had and crafted his offense around that roster. So spreading defenses out, using three wide receivers on the field a predominant amount of time, they were able to get advantageous running lanes at times for Mitchell Trubisky when he was dropping back to pass and nothing was there. And Bears fans saw how productive he was on the ground when he was running the football. It also helps when you're an offense that you're actually running the football from a passing set. You know, it's opportune to run from a pass set and to pass from a run set. And so they were able to get a lot of productivity on the ground when they were running the football out of those 11 personnel sets. So one of the things that, you know, the Bears did to kind of protect a little bit Mitchell Trubisky, which I'm never really in favor of, is like a pretty high run rate. When the game was within one score, the team ran the ball 45% of the time, which was one of the, I think it's like the eighth most in the league in terms of the run rate there. So it's more efficient to be a more pass-oriented offense, but it worked for them, and we'll see what holds for 2019. So he was able to do some things that were efficient with the personnel that he had to work with, and that's the biggest thing. I mean, the underlying factor in the NFL is build an offense that's going to take advantage of the rule set that we're currently working with to try to maximize your leverage to win games. But you also have to adapt it to the personnel that you have. And I think Nagy did a tremendous job of maximizing Trubisky's skill set, his strengths, minimizing his weaknesses, and then taking advantage of the influx of receiving talent that they had on the field to use a lot more 11 personnel.
And when you mentioned the passing out of run sets, running out of pass sets, it makes me think of the main change that happened is Jordan Howard being out and presumably David Montgomery for at least a majority of the season to be your early down back for the Bears. And I, especially considering Jordan Howard's hands, David Montgomery probably gives the Bears even more opportunity to throw to him or at least have him as a viable pass-catching threat on those early downs.
That's correct. And, you know, the Bears, if I look at my forecast strength of schedule, which I include in the book for every team, but I do it for a number of different, disciplines. And the Bears, I project last year they played the fourth easiest schedule of opposing run defenses. This year I'm projecting them to face the 15th toughest. So it's not above league average. It's right around league average. However, it's a big increase in terms of difficulty from what they played last year. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean, this is my projection. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to 100% be accurate. But the point is, the run, it's much easier on a quarterback, as you can imagine, same with your listeners, when you are playing a defense that is bad against the run, because then your rushes are more efficient and the defense might have to adjust to play the run, and then you can pass into situations that are more advantageous. So if the run game doesn't get the same level of productivity against a more difficult schedule in 2019, that could be one of the concerns for the Bears, but you know, I assume that Matt Nagy will do his best to adjust and account for that with his play calls.
It sure seems like with a lot of the personnel staying the same, with the Bears not having a whole lot of draft picks or cap room to work with in the offseason, that the ceiling's going to be raised by Mitch Trubisky's improvement. From looking back at 2018 and what you project for 2019, do you think Mitch is good?
It's a great question. Yes, I think he's good. But the question is, can he be a franchise quarterback? Can he be great? Is he going to be deserving of like a potential lucrative second-year deal? You know, I don't think he's a bad quarterback by any stretch. There are certainly things that he needs to work on. But the great part about it is that with Andy Reid doing this with Alex Smith and now Nagy doing this with Mitch Trubisky, you know, I don't think either of those two quarterbacks are like upper echelon. But look at how often Andy Reid built a double-digit win contender that would make it to the playoffs. You know, they never could ultimately reach the final climax there with Alex Smith at the helm, because how are you going to get by Tom Brady? But in the Bears' case, you know, I definitely think that they're going to be able to get enough out of Trubisky to be able to be a productive offense thanks to what Nagy's going to bring to the mix. He certainly struggles to throw the football deep, but they were able to design the offense so that they didn't need as many effective deep shots. And of course they're hitting them on occasion. But the way that the offense was designed, the route structure, the concepts, they were all playing really to Mitch's strength. And I'm really intrigued to see how the full off season, now that Nagy knows what he's working with, how is he going to coach up Trubisky entering this second year in his system to get the most out of him, and what are they going to modify or change this upcoming year, with defenses having all offseason to see what these two guys did together last year. And a lot of it was, you know, some of the first reads and things of that nature. And defenses are going to start trying to take those away from you this upcoming year. So what else are they adding to Mitch's skill set and getting him more comfortable with?
Outside of the Bears, since it sure seems like it's pretty jumbled with the Bears, Packers, Vikings at the top, and then the Lions are somewhere else. What factors are you looking at most in the NFC North that could be deciding factors in who ends up winning this division?
Well, the biggest thing to me, you know, having talented players is certainly impossible to, like, do without. Like, if you got talented players, you're going to be in a great situation. But coaching is so valuable. And one of the things that disappointed me a little bit from watching some of the other teams in your division is some of the coaching decisions from last year. Number one, you talked about what Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions, obviously they're projected to be last in this division yet again. But this used to be a pretty efficient passing offense, and he got his fingerprints a little bit too much on the offensive side of the football, and they became a tentative, more conservative-based offense, and it really impacted their ability to be productive through the air. And so I don't like the state of the Detroit Lions offense, and so I think it's justified that they're projected to be last. But if you look at the other two teams in the division besides yourself, you're looking at the Minnesota Vikings, and again, Mike Zimmer got his fingerprints a little bit on the offensive side of the ball. They ended up firing John DeFilippo late in the season, replacing him with the tight ends coach, and now that's their offense coordinator for the 2019 season. He's basically going to do sort of what Mike Zimmer wants done, which is a little bit more of a run-based strategy. And then in Green Bay, you have Matt LaFleur coming in there. What fans in Chicago need to realize about Matt LaFleur is think towards what Tennessee did last season. Tennessee went from being this 2 years of exotic smash mouth style running and clouded dust and not really productive offensively to hiring Matt LaFleur. And Matt LaFleur came from L.A. and there was all the talk about, you know, what he was going to bring from the Rams and how great Sean McVay was. Matt LaFleur ended up running the ball more often and less successfully than either of the two prior years of the exotic smash mouth offense in Tennessee. So I know that he had Marcus Mariota. Now he's got Aaron Rodgers. So that's a lot more to work with from the quarterback perspective. But I did not like or love at all what I saw from that offense down in Tennessee. So that's going to be interesting, I think. So the coaching, I think you guys have the best coach in this division, and it's not close, in my opinion. We don't have a lot to work with, so it's a small sample size. If you had to, like, put me on the spot, he's the best, and there's a gap between him and everybody else. But, you know, the story is still to be written on what Matt Nagy is going to be as an NFL head coach. Let's be clear on that. But that to me is the biggest thing that's going to separate things is what are these coaches actually going to do with the talent? And, you know, what's the new offensive coordinator in Minnesota going to do? You got a new offensive coordinator in Green Bay, obviously. And of course, the Lions are kind of the back of the pack.
You know, you brought up a concept that I always find interesting with the NFL, and it seems to apply more with defensive coaches that want to have their fingerprint on the offense a little bit, is like reverse engineering. I would think if I was Mike Zimmer, I would want my offense to be something that I always hate scheming against as a defensive coach, but it always just seems like it's within the prism of what's going to optimize what my side of the ball is going to do, as opposed to what the other side of the ball, what that our offense is actually facing, is going to hate.
I could not agree more. You stated that so eloquently. You know, I could not emphasize what you just said more. The point of what you should be doing offensively is you should always be trying to call plays and make decisions. You know, should we call a timeout here or just go for it or just not call a timeout? Should we go for this fourth down or should we kick it? You should be doing what the other team doesn't want you to do, right? If the other team's sitting back there, man, I hope they don't go for it. Oh, thank goodness, you know, they didn't go for it. Then you probably made the wrong decision on your side of the football. And too often, you're absolutely right. What the defensive-oriented coaches try to do is just impose whatever the team offensively should do to make it easier for their side of the football a little bit, or so that their side of the ball doesn't have to be out there quite as much. So we want to control the clock and control the run game. When those things have proven, I mean, analytics has grown in leaps and bounds in the last few years in the NFL with player tracking data that we now have access to and a lot of other things. we've shown that you don't need to set up the pass with the run. Controlling the football by running the football is actually not going to increase the length of your drives. What's going to increase the length of your drives in terms of time is converting more first downs. And the way you're going to convert more first downs is by passing the ball, not running. So it's counterintuitive to think we should just be this ball control, run-oriented team that's going to help out our defense. We've also seen research that shows that a defense is not going to get any better just because it's had more rest on the sideline. That's not how defensive efficiency works. So all these things run counter with the strategies of some of these defensive-minded coaches. I think some of the best jobs from a coordinator perspective that we've seen under good head coaches that are defensive-oriented have been when they kind of leave the offense alone. Think about what Kyle Shanahan did down in Atlanta with Dan Quinn, a defensive-oriented head coach from Seattle. That was a great marriage for a short while. Think about Josh McDaniels up in New England. Obviously, Bill Belichick, a defensive-minded guy, he's got ideas on the offense side of the ball, but he's not coming in trying to say we need to stop passing the ball or this or that. Like, he's letting those guys be creative offensively. So if I'm the owner of a team and I'm or a GM and picking my coaches, I want to – if I am going to use a defensive head coach, I want him to stay away from the offensive side of the football as much as possible.
Speaking with Warren Sharp here on 670 The Score, follow him on Twitter at SharpFootball, SharpFootballAnalysis.com, SharpFootballStats.com, and go to that Twitter page so you can get that link to Amazon to pick up the paperback or your PDF version of the 2019 football preview. I'm really fascinated by the Bears and the Colts and kind of playing them off of each other. And I think it's partially because Pace and Ballard were the two finalists for the Bears GM job when Ryan Pace ended up getting it. And also the Colts are local and it's just two teams that had success last year, but doing it completely different ways. I guess I just wonder your thoughts on comparing and contrasting how they've done it with the Bears look being pretty close to, it looks like, salary cap hell in a year or two versus the Colts, who I believe still have the most cap room left in the league.
Yeah, this is where, you know, some of the Bears fans may not like my answer here, because I absolutely love what Chris Ballard has done in Indianapolis and setting that team up for the future. And guess what? He's done that despite having to pay a franchise quarterback outside of his rookie deal. He's had to pay Andrew Luck the salary that Andrew Luck is owed as a high-paid, you know, veteran quarterback, and still build a competitive roster around that. And that's something, I mean, obviously they lost to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs in the postseason last year. Patrick Mahomes is on his rookie deal. You look at the Bears, Mitch Trubisky is on his rookie deal. Now, I am totally in favor of teams loading up to try to win the Super Bowl while the quarterback's in the rookie deal. That is a loophole in the current CBA with the structures, and you draft a quarterback and you don't have to pay him nearly as much in his first 4 years. So build a great roster around him. And to his credit, Ryan Pace has done that. And I really like the overall strength of your starting roster. I think the depth leaves some questions, but the issue that you raise is exactly right. What happens after this year? Right, as their roster stands today, they have the second highest total cap allocations for 2020. They're nearly $25 million over that projected cap. And you look at, like, what they've got to work with in the future. They're missing their first and their third-round draft picks in 2020. They traded their fourth to the Patriots. Over the past three drafts, they've selected the fewest players in the league, and they've drafted a league-low six players in the first three rounds. That's inevitable when you're making the trades up and doing the things that Pace has done to build all this veteran talent on the roster. But once your cap goes astronomical, like it's going to next year, and you're running into those types of situations, you don't have the young talent. That's the benefit of draft picks, is that these guys are on these four-year deals and they're cheap. You know, they're cheap players. And if you can get guys who are going to outperform those contracts, that's how you build a winning roster. The way you build a winning roster is not just by, like, maximizing your salary cap. It's by having players on your team that are outperforming what you're paying them. And when you get enough of those guys with great coaching, that's how you build a roster that's capable of winning a Super Bowl. So I'm worried about the Bears after this upcoming season. I think they got a great team this year, great coach. Interested to see how they do, but next year is a different story, in my opinion.
Who are a couple teams that are intriguing to you that, you know, may not even necessarily be teams that are projecting for huge jumps or huge fallbacks, but just a couple teams that you're really intrigued to see what they're able to put on the field this upcoming year?
The first one is the San Francisco 49ers. For me, this is a team that, you know, has been injury riddled since Kyle Shanahan took over. But last year, I used a custom analytic I created called Early Down Success Rate, which basically measures a team's early down efficiency and ability to avoid third downs. And there's not a single metric that I've tested that is more correlated towards winning football games apart from turnovers than this early down success rate metric. And the San Francisco 49ers last year were one of only two teams to rank inside the top 10, both offensively and defensively, in early down success. And they did that despite the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo went down very early in the season in week three, and Kyle Shanahan was once again having to call plays with backup caliber quarterbacks, including Nick Mullins, who ultimately took over that role, and C.J. Beathard. So this offense, this team has been injury riddled, the defensive side of the ball as well, and they do play a very difficult schedule once again this upcoming season. And if you look at a lot of their metrics from last year, there's, you know, not a lot of things to be optimistic about necessarily, except the fact that they get Jimmy Garoppolo back. But by the fact of this early down success rate metric showing so highly on them, I'm very optimistic about their ability this season. And I don't know that they're going to turn into this double-digit juggernaut all of a sudden and win, you know, 11, 12 games because of their schedule. But I think this is going to be a team that's going to give a lot of opponents grief next season. So that's a team. And then another team that I think a lot of people are sort of down on is the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. And it's such an interesting and fascinating team to me because look at the situation that Lamar Jackson was put into. He wasn't the starter in camp. He wasn't taking any reps with the ones. The first, like, whatever it was, 8 weeks of the season, he's standing on the sidelines holding a clipboard, getting in there a little bit for, like, some trick plays and whatnot, but he's watching an offense that's a passing-oriented offense with Joe Flacco. All of a sudden, in the bye week, Joe got hurt. Bye week comes. They insert Lamar Jackson, and the offense is totally different. Everything is different. They even use, like, different running backs. They're running a totally new style of offense right out of the bye week. And it's a run-oriented offense to try to help benefit Lamar Jackson. However, he wasn't watching this. They weren't doing it during the preseason. He wasn't watching it through the first 8 weeks. Very difficult on him. And eventually they went into the playoffs. They lose to the Chargers because of the fact that they refused to switch to a little bit more pass-heavy approach earlier in that game. I think getting Lamar Jackson the full off season. He's got a new offense coordinator who's had a lot of success in the past. I think that he's going to have a very high upside compared to what a lot of people are thinking about Lamar Jackson. Now, he's like Mitch Trubisky in the sense that, you know, his arm and his downfield passing probably never going to be the best in the league, right? But I think the offense is going to be, because it's so unique and different, going to be able to craft an ability to be effective. And I think a lot of people around the league just say, well, it comes down to your quarterback, and Lamar Jackson's not a good passer, so this is not going to be a good team this upcoming season. I tend to disagree. And one of the interesting things that I can say about teams around the league, offenses around the league, is if you do something different and you do it well, you're bound to have a lot of success. It almost doesn't matter what that different thing is that you do. If you look at the Chiefs, a lot of 12 personnel. If you look at, you know, what New England does, a lot of 21. If you look at the league trend, it's a lot of 11, but the Saints use like the second least amount of 11 personnel. They use a lot of different types of grouping. So do something different and do it well. That's one of the things that Baltimore is doing. Everybody is not planning to face a rushing style offense like theirs, and boom, they come in. I'm interested to see what they look like this year.
All right, Warren, last one before I let you go, and greatly appreciate your time. I know you've done consulting for NFL teams, so you're right there. You're in the thick of it. Are there any trends that you're expecting to see more of this season, whether it's anything schematically, personnel groupings, anything along those lines?
Well, I think more teams need to be using a little bit more passing out of heavier personnel groupings. I don't know that we're actually going to see that this upcoming season. I think it's going to be more of a trend towards early down passing. The league was so much more efficient last year with the first down passing. The completion rate improved to 68%. It was only 65% for the prior 3 years. And that doesn't sound like a big jump, but it actually is extremely big when you look at the volume of passes that are made on first downs in the league. The yards per attempt really jumped as well. So I really think that more teams are going to get into the mentality that it's a good down to pass on when the defense doesn't know what you're doing. But the great thing about the NFL is so many different types of coaches, so many different types of teams with different strengths and weaknesses, that there always is going to be different wrinkles and things that are going to pop up that, you know, there's not one like secret thing that's going to work for every single one of these teams. But so I'm really interested to see what the strategies are that some of these teams end up employing and then studying them during the course of the season. But that's definitely one thing I expect we'll see is a little bit more first down passing.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.